From WAMC in Albany, this is the Legislative Gazette, a weekly magazine about New York State government and politics. Your host is David Gastina, with political commentary by Dr. Alan Shartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
Coming up this week, state lawmakers and lobby groups say Governor Cuomo was wrong when he said there was no political will to enact reforms in 2017. Our political observer Alan Shartok shares his thoughts on a proposal to make any president who hails from New York turn over their tax returns to the state. And the state university has a new chancellor. Those stories and more on the Legislative Gazette. New York State lawmakers and lobby groups say Governor Cuomo was in error when he said that there was no political will to enact reforms in 2017. The Legislative Gazette's Karen DeWitt reports.
Democratic lawmakers, along with the League of Women Voters, rallied outside the Senate chambers for bills that would allow same-day voting and early voting by mail in New York State. Senate Democratic leader Andrea Stewart-Cousins says the most recent presidential election should serve as a wake-up call about the importance of voting and access to polling machines.
We have an abysmal voting turnout record, and frankly, if people have more options, they will be able to get to the polls. I think nobody doubts what the consequences of elections really are. If you were asleep before, I think everybody's awake now.
Governor Cuomo, who said in March that he would try like heck to achieve voting reform, was more pessimistic in mid-April about the chances for any types of reforms.
There is no political will to do it. Otherwise, we would have done it in the budget.
The League of Women Voters' Jennifer Wilson strongly disagrees. Speaking in front of around 200 supporters, she says many members of the public are more eager for change than ever.
When I look out there and I see the people who care about this issue, who are going to these different marches, who care about our democracy, I think it's ridiculous. Of course we care. We're all here, and it's not just us. It's other groups. And of course the members care about these issues, and we want to get them done, and we want to get them done this year.
The voter access bills move through committee in the Assembly, but are stalled in the Senate.
Senate 3984 by Senator DeFrancisco, an act to amend the state finance law and the education.
Meanwhile, in the state Senate, which is controlled by Republicans, the Finance Committee voted to move on another reform bill. It would add more oversight to the state's economic development project contracting process. Nine former associates of Governor Cuomo, including his former closest aide, have been charged by federal prosecutors with corruption, including bribery and bid rigging, in connection with the procurement of contracts for some of the governor's largest economic development projects, including the Buffalo Billion. Bill sponsor, Senate Deputy Majority Leader John DeFrancisco, says the measure would reinstate the power of the state controller to have oversight authority over the economic development projects. Senator DeFrancisco, speaking in the hallway before going into a party conference, also disagrees with Cuomo's assertion that the legislature does not have the will to do reform.
There's no will for reform in the executive branch either if it's dealing with issues like this, like the procurement bill, because it's the last thing I think you would want. Because it's the last thing he would want.
Why do you say that?
Because it restricts his ability to do what he wants to do when he wants to do it. Someone else is looking over the contracts, and that's exactly why it's necessary.
DeFrancisco admits he, along with most lawmakers, voted to cut the controller out of the review process in 2011, but he says he did not at the time realize the full implications of the change.
It was a mistaken vote if I voted for it, and that's why we got to correct it.
Cuomo at the time argued that the economic development projects would move faster without additional layers of oversight. Controller Tom DiNapoli has feuded with Cuomo in the past. The governor proposed creating his own inspector general to review economic development contracts, but Senator DeFrancisco says that's a non-starter. The measure has a majority party sponsor in the assembly, and Senator DeFrancisco predicts it could be approved and sent to the governor's desk before the session ends in June for Cuomo to sign or veto. In Albany, I'm Karen DeWitt.
Joining us now, Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Chartok. Alan, this week, a couple of New York lawmakers came up with a proposed bill that they introduced on Thursday that says that any president who hails from New York State has to turn over their taxes to New York.
Say that again, David?
That any president of the United States that hails from, comes from, lives in New York, must turn over their taxes to New York State, including a proposal that they wouldn't even get on the ballot in New York unless they turned over their taxes.
Well, it's a laugh for all, right? It's going nowhere. It's not going to happen. But it does make the point that, hey, Trump, you know, you're a New Yorker, but you're not really a New Yorker, and you're not really welcome here. So we'll put something that will be very popular with people, which is that unless you release your taxes, you can't be on the ballot in New York State. It's funny. It makes the point, and it isn't going to happen.
Will this happen? In addition to New York State Attorney General Eric Schneiderman, who's been involved with lawsuits against President Trump, Mayor Bill de Blasio's budget in New York City, his executive budget's going to include funding for immigrant legal services.
Well, look, New York State is a blue state. New York State doesn't like Trump one bit. And when he comes to town, he's going to be met by a torrent of very angry people, which is, in my opinion, appropriate because of what he's doing to this country. And of course, New Yorkers believe in fair play. They truly believe that we should be honoring the people who do all the hard work and are the infrastructure of our society and who deserve a fair break. And New York doesn't want to lose the money. On the other hand, they can do things like putting in an increase in immigrant services. It cements de Blasio's group that voted him in as mayor and will continue to vote for him. And it makes him a hero to many. So while Andrew Cuomo may not like him, some reason he got elected mayor once, and all according to all the polls, he'll get elected mayor another time.
Dr. Christina Johnson, appointed chancellor, and our Dave Lucas in the program today has a story on that. She succeeds SUNY's first female chancellor, Nancy Zimpher, who is stepping down in June, Alan. And, of course, she comes in at a time when the governor has a major plan for free college tuition in New York.
Well, she's an extraordinary woman. If you read this woman's biography, it's incredible what she's accomplished. Patents and ideas and leadership of major companies. And she is a heck of a choice. And I can't wait to get to meet her and to interview her on WAMC because she's exactly what the system needs. Nancy Zimpher left or is leaving and proved to be a very good chancellor. And now we have the opportunity to see it happening again. Of course, she's going to have a lot of problems because, you know, SUNY always needs more money. The campuses need more money. There's a tremendous lobbying group and the kids who don't want to see increases in tuition because even, you know, $500 is a lot of money to somebody who has nothing. And when all the fees and everything else are done, you know, the idea that you have to find your family, middle-class family, may have to find $20,000 in order to put you in a dormitory and everything else. So the governor's plan for those people whose families make less than $125,000 is seen as extraordinary and is leading the way in the United States for free college tuition, something in our discussions, David, I've always said were so important. I've always talked about how grateful I am that when I went out to college in the Bronx, it cost nothing, absolutely nothing. Then there was a student fee, and then we were off to the races. So yes, if you're going to educate people in elementary school, secondary school, high school, as a part of equality of opportunity, then how can you have equality of opportunity if a whole segment of society isn't allowed to go to college?
Speaking of equality of opportunity and people's right to vote, Alan, is one of the issues that lawmakers and lobby groups say Governor Cuomo was in error on when he said there was no political will to enact reforms in this year's budget.
Oh, well, yes, he's right about that. Look, ethics in New York State are those of an alley cat. We all know it. When he says there's no political will, that doesn't mean you stop leading. You lead. You say, this is what we have to do. He's made the case. This is what we have to do. And then he goes and turns around and leaves it. And he raises a fortune to run for political office himself. He talks about doing away with provisions of the law that allow him to do that, but that doesn't happen either. Hey, look, the legislature got there. How? They got there by playing the same old game. What, they're going to call for reform of a system so that Harry the bartender can run against them with public funds and nobody's allowed to use funds and do all the rest of it? Nonsense. You should see the war chest this governor has amassed. And it is a study in hypocrisy. You say one thing and you do another.
Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Chartok.
You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. The State University of New York's Board of Trustees unanimously approved Christina Johnson's appointment as the new SUNY Chancellor this week. The Legislative Gazette's Dave Lucas has more.
After 9 months of broadly inclusive and deliberative search process, I am pleased to have the chance today to introduce Dr. Christina Johnson to our SUNY community.
That's H. Carl McCall, chairman of the Board of Trustees of the State University of New York system, prior to the official announcement. Johnson, the founder of a hydroelectric developer and a former undersecretary for the U.S. Department of Energy, has been provost at Johns Hopkins University and dean of the Pratt School of Engineering at Duke University. She will replace Nancy Zimpfer, who ends her 8 years of service in June.
I'm proud to be passing SUNY into such capable hands. I'm more confident than ever that our university system is positioned to continue to excel, and I know that Dr. Christina Johnson is the right leader to keep SUNY at the top of its game.
Regional educators are welcoming Johnson's appointment. New York State United Teachers Union President Andy Pallotta.
We're thrilled that we have someone who is capable and very much with the foresight to come in and bring SUNY to a place of preeminence in this state, where we can see SUNY as a place where all of our students can get a great education, and we know that she believes in all the things that we do, having the resources available, the faculty supporting the schools. This is a great opportunity for the SUNY system and for all of our students.
Fred Cole, president of United University Professions, describes Johnson as an innovator whose talents will be put to good use at SUNY.
I think this is a very a positive step by SUNY to build on what Nancy Zimpfer has started, and hopefully with Dr. Johnson as chancellor, what we'll see is a real strong commitment to the academic mission of SUNY, which I think is a necessary step, given that there's been so much emphasis on the economic role for SUNY, which is certainly important. But I think Dr. Johnson, with her extensive experience in teaching, research, and administration, brings a unique mix that will emphasize, I'm hopeful, the academic mission of SUNY.
Cole says he is pleased by Johnson's intent to focus on environmental sustainability, a UUP priority. Johnson begins her $560,000 a year position at SUNY on or about September 5th, coinciding with the phasing in of a plan to make tuition free for full-time New York students. Mark Cohen is president of the SUNY Student Assembly.
It was important that we found someone who truly understood the importance of student leadership and shared governance. And Dr. Johnson exemplifies that. In addition to bringing an outstanding track record of leadership and experience to the table, Dr. Johnson is truly the type of leader who seeks input from all stakeholders and wants to move the university forward in ways that it never has been before.
443,000 full and part-time students are enrolled at SUNY schools across New York.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Dave Lucas.
Opioid abuse and addiction has become a scourge in America, including in New York State. And to that end, SPARC, or Substance Abuse and Recovery of Clinton County, was formed in 2016 to raise public awareness and enhance opioid addiction prevention efforts in the North Country. The group is now seeking volunteers to tell their addiction stories in hopes of getting more people into recovery and eliminating stigma. The Legislative Gazette's Pat Bradley spoke with members of SPARC's steering committee.
In February 2016, Governor Andrew Cuomo announced funding for a detox center in Schuyler Falls near Plattsburgh. It was anticipated the facility would be open and operational within a year, but it will now be early next year before it opens. In the intervening time, the addiction treatment community in the region has redoubled its efforts to deal with the crisis and educate the public. Clinton County Department of Social Services Director of Legal and Social Services, Christine Peters, says the addiction crisis is significantly impacting the child welfare system.
Over 50% of the petitions that we have filed in abuse and neglect, and also many of the reports that we deal with, have substance abuse involved in them. There isn't one place in the building that isn't dealing with the opiate epidemic. But I think also, you know, treatment's dealing with it. The court system is dealing with it. Law enforcement is dealing with it. The business community is dealing with it. The hospital is dealing with it. It is our community's problem.
CVPH Chief Medical Officer Kent Hall says while prevention is crucial, emergency responders must have ready access to Narcan due to the increasing numbers of overdoses. Hall explains that's because fentanyl, a strong synthetic drug, is often mixed with heroin.
These packets don't come with ingredient labels on them, and they end up, you know, lying somewhere not breathing. And if somebody can't get to them in a very short period of time, then they end up dead. And so that's why we are very strong proponents for having Narcan ways of getting that medication to them on an urgent basis.
A number of efforts to deal with the addiction crisis are ongoing across the region. In November, Burlington created a task force, and last month, Mayor Murrah Weinberger outlined 11 principles to guide the city's approach to the crisis. On April 4th, he hosted a discussion on the book Dreamland, The True Tale of America's Opioid Epidemic with its author. On the same evening in Plattsburgh, SPARC screened the FBI and DEA documentary, Chasing the Dragon, The Life of an Opiate Addict.
You're going to watch unscripted interviews that include some raw emotion and some profanity. You're going to witness real tragedy and learn what happens when drugs take hold of real people and don't let go.
More than 900 people watched and then discussed the crisis. Kent Hall says it's too early to tell if forums and events like this are helping to stem the problem.
The conversations are changing, and the conversations are not about, you know, we've got to lock them all up. This is about we are all affected by this, and we all need to come together in order to address it. SPARC is about getting those people together and the synergy that occurs.
SPARC is recruiting individuals willing to share their stories on its Facebook page. Both Peters and Champlain Valley Family Center Executive Director Connie Willey hope real stories can break the stigma attached to addiction.
Our hope is that puts a face on addiction, because if addiction doesn't look like somebody that you live with, work with, or go to school with, it's foreign to you.
And, you know, listening to somebody share their personal story of being active in disease and how they engaged in recovery and then recovery, what it's like now, is probably one of the best ways to offer hope. And that's a critical piece that we want to get out there.
There's links for more information at WAMC.org. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Pat Bradley.
You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Giustina. Eight groups sponsored a forum recently with the Democratic contenders for Westchester County Executive
And depending on the outcome of the county Democratic convention on May 10th, there could be a September primary to see who faces off against incumbent Republican Rob Astorino, a former candidate for governor of New York. The Legislative Gazette's Allison Dunn has more.
In general, Ken Jenkins and George Latimer are philosophically aligned, but when it comes to whether to unite behind one candidate after the Democratic convention, their views diverge. Jenkins of Yonkers, who serves on the Westchester County Board of Legislators, remains steadfast in saying that if he does not have the support of convention delegates, he will run in a primary.
The people need to have their voices heard, and that's the primary voters. It is not the district leaders, it's not the party elite, it's not those folks at all. And we in the Democratic Party have almost a responsibility during this time to make sure that those voices are getting heard so we can increase voter turnout, so we increase voter participation. And again, having choice and competition is a good thing. It's not a bad thing.
Latimer, on the other hand, says he will end his campaign if he loses at the convention.
Whatever happens on May 10th, it's going to take a unified Democratic Party to have a clear message for Westchester voters. And it's, you know, I realize that Rob Astorino is a very persuasive politician. He's very good, great communicator. He's got a lot of money. And to offer an alternate vision is going to take as much resources and as much coordination as we can muster. That's why I think the sooner we come together with unity, the better we are. My unilateral statement of being willing to endorse Ken stands without reciprocity. I whether he does or doesn't do the same thing for me, I know that that is the right thing to do, and I'm prepared to help him if I'm not elected, if I'm not selected that night.
Jenkins had entered the 2013 county executive race, but the convention supported New Rochelle Mayor Noam Bramson. Jenkins did not go on to a primary. He says there is a difference this time in that Democratic voters have been energized since Republican Donald Trump was elected president. Plus, says Jenkins,
Rob Astorino is trying to map out a strategy to run for governor again, and he's trying to relitigate his case against Governor Cuomo. And I think that the Democrats would be making a mistake if we put a state legislator up to allow them to be a foil for that particular thing. My case is that Rob Astorino cannot do that. I've been focused in Westchester County. I'm giving up my county legislator seat to make sure to make this run.
Latimer, who represents the 37th Senate District, believes serving on the state level is an asset.
What I bring to the table, because of my experiences, I've served in the municipal government as a city councilman. I've served in both houses of the state legislature. I have relationships in Albany that are important to have if you wind up being county executive to try to advance issues and so forth. And I think my political experience in running for office over a larger portion of the county, a more diverse part of the county, gives me the ability to understand what a countywide race is going to be like when we get to the general election. It will be tough. I've been through the fire.
Latimer of Rye says he has won his Republican-leaning district three times despite being outspent. Democratic Assemblyman Tom Abinanti of Greenberg has decided not to run. Erica Pierce is with Action Together Northern Westchester, which began as a pantsuit group supporting Hillary Clinton for president.
Well, we are first off trying to educate our members on the importance of county government, on the major issues that have been part of our county for the last 8 years, the things that Astorino has done, what we anticipate he will continue to do, and what the alternatives would look like in the hopes, to be honest, that we can have an alternative in the next election cycle.
County Executive Astorino, who is seeking a third term, says he is ready to compare and contrast records with his opponent.
I'm just going to run on my record. Nothing's changing no matter who they put up. And I'm proud of not having raised taxes and cutting them for the last 7 years and strengthening our social safety net, protecting the environment, and working with people across party lines. I mean, that's how we've gotten things done in the county. So, you know, I'm ready. I'm ready whoever it is.
Both Jenkins and Latimer say no matter who ends up the candidate, he will have to work to get Democrats out to the polls in an off-year election. Latimer says that means using a field approach, going door to door.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Allison Dunn.
And that about does it for this week's show. We had help from the New York State Public Radio Network. For copies, call 1-800-323-9262. That's 1-800-323-9262. Ask for program number 1717. Or just listen to our podcast on the web at wamc.org. And join us again next week at this same time for more news on New York State government and politics. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm David Gustina.
statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.